Well, we did have a fine 6-week trip. When one goes on a trip, he likes to have a captive audience when he comes back and show them his 300 slides that he took and tell them all about it, even though most of the people would have already been there before. Experiences are sort of like that. You know, when you go to the Grand Canyon to see the Grand Canyon, you don't like to do it alone. Now, there are occasions when you just want to be with yourself and the Lord in the Grand Canyon or the mountains somewhere. But those are usually rather special. Most of the time, if we're going on a scenic journey or a journey to a strange land we've never been to before, we like companionship. Now, I've had the privilege of a lot of travel in my day, particularly during the years I was director of research for Brigham Young University. And I haven't taken my wife on too many of the trips. I think perhaps twice to Europe. I took her, taken her quite a few places in the United States. But I've never taken her to Japan, where I've been. So on this trip, I took her. And of course, it was more pleasant because, you know, we can talk back and forth. You don't like to say, oh, what a beautiful temple, or oh, what a beautiful Grand Canyon to yourself. You like to express it to someone else. And it's much more enjoyable that way, to let each other, you know, how you feel about some beautiful scene or some strange situation that you had the privilege of doing. Then when you get back with your trip, you want to tell other people about it too. Well, to tell you about our trip would really take me a long time, but perhaps I can tell something of it. In connection with this conversion of Paul and the great missionary that he was in this area of the world, one can wonder about missionary efforts in this present day and in the rest of the world. And most of us, when we travel, if it's not the first thing we do to look up the church, it's certainly the second or the third thing that we do. And of course, we did this in India and the other lands that we visited. Now, if you compare the size of the world to the size of what was thought to be the world in most people's minds in the days of Paul, you can see that the early Christian church was in this little bit of area here, just east of the Mediterranean, if I have the right situation, and I think I have, right in here. Now today, of course, we can look at this entire world with the headquarters of the church being over here. Now this particular map projection exaggerates the landmass areas in these high and low latitudes. And since there's more land in the northern latitudes than in the southern latitudes, Russia and these areas in Greenland and Iceland and other places look much larger in area than they are. But if one were to put points on the map of where the church is located, of course we would find this vast area in here where the church is not located. Now, in India, the church is not officially allowed to have any missionaries. And there are not too many saints in India, but there are some. It's amazing that there are some saints in India. There are probably 300 members of the church in India. All of the missionaries are not allowed. And there are small branches here and there of people who are self-converted. Now that's an interesting situation when you find people who are self-converted. And those stories of self-conversion are always interesting. I can tell you one. Since Paul is a great missionary, I guess we can tell missionary stories. I was in New Delhi, except for a trip to Agra, where the Taj Mahal is located. Now, in New Delhi, the night before we left on our trip, I had given a talk at Weber College. And I call it Weber College because it was out when I went to school there 40 years ago. Delaney Kennedy was in attendance at the Crocker game. Now, Delaney Kennedy, as you know, was Secretary of the Treasury under Nixon. And later on, he was ambassador at large for the United States. Now, of course, the United States has ambassadors in the major countries of the world. But on occasion, it has had an ambassador at large, an ambassador to the whole world, who has sent on special missions here and there throughout the world. Now, while David P. Kennedy is no longer ambassador at large, he is still a special ambassador for the United States government on a consulting basis. So he goes to various countries of the world as an ambassador for the United States on specific occasions. Within the church, he, I don't know whether this title is official, but he is considered world ambassador for the church, and it may be an official title. So he is sent by the president of the church to various areas of the world to see what he can do to promote the interests of the church there. Sometimes he can combine the two functions. He's in an excellent position for this because, you see, there's not a United States embassy in the entire world that he does not have access to. He shows up in a country on church business. He can immediately call the ambassador in any land, and he'll be invited in. You can talk to him about problems that may help the church in some situation. Well, I had the opportunity of talking to David P. Kennedy that night before that on our trip, and he said, "When you're in India, look up a man by whose name is Van Dam. He works for the American Embassy in New Delhi, and he is president of a small branch there." Well, when we arrived, we were in India on business, personal business. I had sold to the United Nations a high pressure machine that I made. They presented it as a gift to India, and I went to India to install this machine, set it up, and get it working. So for 16 days, I was on business in India. Then the wife and I spent the next month just being tourists. I originally had planned to contact scientific establishments, see high pressure researchers and other things going on, but as soon as we arrived in Bangkok, after leaving India, I decided I'm going to be a tourist. I'm going to forget all this combining business with pleasure for once in my life. So we were genuine and honest to goodness tourists without any business for 4 months. We were put up at the Ashoka Hotel in New Delhi, which is a government-owned hotel, which is built by the British. Currently, perhaps the only safe hotel for Westerners in India when it comes to the point of sanitation matters. And this is very important in India for a man from a Western civilization to live in India and come out still alive. I can't go into all the details, but as near as I can tell, it's the most unsanitary land on the face of the whole earth. To get down to grisly details, I'd say that 98% of all Indians in India do not have access to even an outhouse. They have a contempt for the Western world's porcelain there in that regard. I don't understand the details of this. Most Indians live in a mud hut out area. And they take care of sanitary matters on the dirt floor of their hut in the corner usually. They have the caste system, as you know. And the lowest, there are 7 main castes, but there are divisions within the castes. And the lowest of the untouchables, whose shadow cannot even fall on another man without polluting the other man, have the duty of coming in everybody else's mud hut and once or twice a day with their hands, cleaning up man's refuse, putting it in a, nowadays, tin cans, and past day in a porcelain, a 5-clay pot of some kind. And carrying it out, and they just throw it on the land. In the cities, they go to the bathroom right on the side of the street. And even people who may have a, well, look like I do, with a sugar pile, say nothing of running back and just on the side of the road, in the roads. But that's the way the land is. One doctor in India estimated that the upper 1 foot of soil in all of India was human waste. Because it's been going on for thousands of years. Well, as a result of this, they have all kinds of dysentery, some of which can kill Western men, so you have to be real careful. At the American Embassy, they put the water from the city mains in New Delhi through 3 stages of purification, and then have people at the embassy boil it for 1/2 hour after that before you use it. The fruit that you eat, the vegetables that you eat, are soaked in iodine solution for 20 minutes. And that means even a banana in its peeling or an orange with its peeling or not with its peeling. So, you wonder what to eat when you're eating it's difficult. They did grow beautiful vegetables and fruit. It wasn't all your peeling, but you have to be careful. Yeah, it does things that will soak it up. An orange or something like that does it because it doesn't get all the way through the peeler before you have to eat it. At the hotel, the wife and I got so we would drink Ovaltine, which they would serve almost boiling hot. That's one thing that saves them over a little bit. They drink hot tea, you know, instead of water. We'll tell the boil the eggs for 4 minutes. And that's about what we would eat, and then we would go eat fruit. Now, we contacted this man, Van Bam, and I used to live in the Pleasant View, or we recognized him when we saw him. His name was Norman Van Dam, his wife was Carol. When they were students at Brigham Young University, they lived in Gleason's basement. Maybe most of you are too young to remember that. So we knew them. And then we got the word on other things. The monkeys are rabid, most of the animals are rabid, half the dogs are rabid. So you have to watch for rabies. You never get near a dog. If you're at the embassy, you have to take 3 rabies shots twice a year. In advance, you know, or hoping that we don't get rabies. When we arrived, we were also informed by the embassy that they had a malaria epidemic. And, of course, they don't tell outsiders that they have these epidemics because the tourists wouldn't come in when we were out. So we had to immediately get on a chlorinated quinine pill, which we had to take 2 of every week, and which we were supposed to still take it up until yesterday, but we lost the bottles. We won't get a last one. Anyway, it is a very unsanitary plan and very dangerous to be in for people who aren't normally exposed to their viruses and that bacteria. Well, they had a big parliamentary conference there the 3rd or 4th day that we were in the hotel. We had to leave the hotel with no place to go. And so the Van Dams invited us to live in the American Embassy compound in their home, which was a great thing because then we could be sanitary again and not worry about this matter so much. Well, now the Van Dams took this assignment with the embassy in India, knowing full well that there would be no church there. And they're carrying out a full program with just their family. They had four boys, the oldest is a deacon, 12, and they just decided that we'll do the whole works. MIA, priesthood meeting, Sunday school, sacrament meeting, everything. And so they would purchase all the church manuals that apply to everybody in the family, and they faithfully and beautifully do the whole thing. I really admire them for that. Now, the question?
What is the restriction on the
doctrine?
It's not common.
No, but there will be. It's on its way. The domino theory was correct. As Vietnam goes, the rest of them will fall. And it looks like it's happening in India. entirely in my mind, from being there, reading the newspapers, hearing her speeches during this parliamentary conference, I'm convinced she wants to be the first lady communist dictator in power over here in 5 years.
My question is, how can they get written material?
But it can come in. They're still that free. They're slowly losing their freedom. For example, we have an emergency situation, nothing to do with sickness or whatnot, but to do with the equipment I was installing, where we needed to get some things. We could not get a telegram out of the United States. They hate us right now. The more we try to do for people, the more they hate us sometimes. That is the case in India. Neither could we get a telephone call in or out of the country. So we got a message to Virginia so she could take care of the matter through a peacekeeping group stationed on the Pakistani-Indian border, you know, an observing team to keep them from fighting. Not to keep them from, but to relay a message to the UN in New York that fighting is starting. So we got a telegram out of the country through our peacekeeping group through Virginia to go down to our shop and get this stuff and send it off to India through the United Nations diplomatic pouch. Because it goes through the Indian mails in general, because of the heavy censorship of their own people and whatnot, they would lay in customs for 6 weeks. Well, even getting it through that way, it did not arrive before I left the country. Whether it's there right now, I don't know. The mail does go through. Air mail is, I've had a lot of correspondence back and forth. It takes anywhere from 7 to 10 days from here in India right now. And mail leaving their own offices is censored before it leaves. Well, there are a few Latter-day Saints in that area besides the Van Dams. There are a few Indian people who have been converted in interesting ways. And there are some other Westerners that are associated with the embassy with other things. No, I take that back. He's the only one with the American embassy. There's somebody associated with the British somehow. Who's what? Who's the Latter-day Saint? Who lives 2.5 hours away. And then there's the most solid member outside of the Van Dam family is a self-converted man who lives 200 miles northwest of New Delhi. He is a mid-caste Thai and teaches school in high school, history. His students wanted to learn about religions of the world, and so he decided to look into a few religions. Now, you may know that the main religion in India is Hindu. Now, Buddhism started in India and was exported from India to most of Asia, China, Japan, and the Southeast Asian nations. It didn't stay in India. It's too bad. While I may disagree with the tenets of Buddhism, there is a well a lot better religion than Hinduism. Because Hinduism is 100% fatalistic. So you are what you are and you can never rise above it. Which, how India can ever be an industrialized nation if you want to be. Well, that religion prevails in that land, I cannot see. So see, if you're born the lowest of the untouchables, your children forever must remain that way. And then they believe in reincarnation, so you never kill anything. Well, that aunt may be my grandfather returning, you see. So he won't swat a fly. There are many paradoxes in their religion, though. Because while the flies you see are never killed, so they're everywhere. And every animal lives until it dies a natural death. They say in India that we don't kill anything, but my observation after I lived there was, we did not kill anything rapidly and fast, you know. We let it die a painful, slow, agonizing death. even though many of the upper class, the Brahmins are the top, and it's lowered also, but the Brahmins, even at the top, may say they're an atheist, but they're not really. They still over the caste system, I guess because it's to their own benefit to be on top. But they also have a funny quirk with regard to eating anything that is animal. Now, they will drink milk, but they will not eat an egg. And they will not eat flesh or meat. They wouldn't eat a mosquito. You can't eat anything like that. And over the years, I have become acquainted with quite a number of Indian scientists. And when I get to the United States, they are just scared stiff that if they eat anything, say salad, which seems to be all vegetable, that somebody may have put some oil on the salad that contains some animal fat in addition to vegetable. They live in horror of that. It's a very peculiar thing among men who have past degrees in chemistry or physics. They are that way. Even though they say they don't believe in the Pareteans, they still it's like some exceptional fanatic with the word of wisdom, thinking perhaps like bread is poison, hoping that's cutting on anybody's toes, but they're that way even though they say they don't believe in their religion.
What caste do scientists believe?
They're all bones, without a doubt. But then, like I said, lots of fine gradations within the caste. It's sort of like bowing in Japan. First time I went to Japan, you know, the elevator boy bowed to you, so I'd bow back to him. But there's a subtleness to bowing that Westerners do not understand. There are a thousand ways to bow. And they're very subtle, just like the movements of a Thai dance. You know what it is? Just move your hand ever so much and have a finger bent backward, just the exact amount. Very subtle. The bowing is the same way. So the Japanese are probably laughing like crazy the way Tracy Hall is bowing the elevator again. But it's the same with the caste system. While there are seven main divisions, there are very subtle subdivisions that only a person in the system probably can understand.
I was just wondering, 300 Mormons, what are they?
Most government are the untouchables. See, they've got somewhere to go in Mormonism, but in Hinduism, they're stuck forever down at the bottom. Well, I started to tell you about the conversion of this man who's taught history in high school. By the way, the education system in India is way beneath Western standards. I would say that the PhD scientists I got were overloaded by degrees in physics and chemistry, but not the equivalent of a 2-year college student with BYU in physics and chemistry, not the PhD. But they had an urge to have the degree, they want the degree. They have so many problems you can't imagine how it ever happened. Anyway, back to this man. Let's stay on his conversion. So in reading about religions, he came across Mormonism, and he became intrigued with it. And now you know that in the libraries of the world, if you go read about Mormonism, you end up reading about polygamy and a few other things that are always stated in a derogatory way. But even so, he was fascinated and he pursued the course. He found out that the headquarters of the Mormon Church was in Salt Lake City, so he went straight to Salt Lake City to get some Latter-day Saint literature. And he read it, and he told his kids in class about it, and he became converted on his own. And he wrote to the church in Salt Lake City and said, I've read all this literature, I'm converted, I want to be baptized. And so they said, well, there's a man named Warren Van Dam, who was Ranch President in the Valley, don't be nice if I get the contact with him. And he did, and he was baptized. He has been made an elder. He's the only elder in the area of New Valley, probably the only elder within 1,000 miles of any other place other than Norman Van Dam. Norman Van Dam will be leaving his assignment in New Valley in June of 1976, which will leave this man as the only elder. He is currently trying to find a job teaching school in New Valley so that he can hold that few remnants of the church around that area together. It's very difficult to trade jobs and find another job in England. So
Well, I'm gonna get a job in the valley as a lawyer to find my firm. And I'm sure I'll have them, that's the best thing for the way.
Now, for most of the rest of the Latter-day Saints, they are in southern India. Now, southern India is a Christian area. The Hindus of India, I suppose, are maybe 98%. The Christians in India, I think, are only 0.5%. They kind of concentrate in the south. There are Muslims. Now, Muslims won't eat meat, and they won't kill cows. And because they do have hotels in India and have to feed Westerners and people who do eat meat, they get it from the Muslims. Now, it's the law in India that you cannot kill anything. That's the law. But they allow these Muslims to butcher a few water buffalo, which they sell as spring beef in the hotels to Westerners. Now, I started to say that the Indian people will not even swat a fly. But they'll kill a Pakistani if they can get their hands around his neck. That's one of the paradoxes of India. Well, they come from Muslim hands, I guess. Because the Hindu were not even able. You see, that destroys the life. It could hatch out of their chip. So they're not even able. Although I would think, you know, if they wanted to get like the ancient Jews with law 1 sub AV and get that things down to a fine thing, they could keep those hands from being fertilized, and then of course that AVC could not ever turn into a chip, and then maybe it'd be legal to eat it. Maybe they do that. I don't know. Maybe that's the way around it. But it's all I know they themselves are not even able to get any time, but the whole process is India, for the moment, is pretty warlike. You see soldiers in jeeps everywhere. And they hate the red Chinese with a passion, second only to the way they hate the Pakistanis. Well, I suppose that, and you know, they've committed quite a number of warlike acts since about 1960, like the Whitsfield attack on Picnogi Port of Goa, which had belonged to Portugal for 600 years. And their incursions into Pakistan and Bangladesh and whatnot. They're pretty warlike and pretty aggressive. They don't want to kill other human beings. You know, they won't start a fly. Which is a paradox. I don't understand the reason behind that. But one interesting thing about the Pakistanis, they have Pakistani jokes. But a lot of the Polish jokes. It's a put down on just how stupid the Pakistanis are, which is really funny. Because the stupidest science I've ever seen in my life in this laboratory when I'm trying to teach them how to do stuff. Just pull a Pakistani, put down jokes. In India, down in here, where the Latter-day Saints are, there have been within just since we left there 6 weeks ago, we've received word that there have been 100 new converts for the Latter-day Saints down in India. So you see, the possibility exists. And David P. Kennedy is leading it. David P. Kennedy has quite an interest in India for some reason. Perhaps President Kimball is telling him to do things there. But he had been to India 2 weeks before we arrived, and he'll be back there, I think, this week. Trying to see what can be done down there. Now, an interesting thing, you know what, it's a long ways from Hinduism to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Although you can see in all religions of the earth, in Japan, Thailand, everywhere where you went, you can see hints of truth of the original gospel of Jesus Christ. Go back to Adam. To me, all this caste system is a mixed up situation where they're judging men as they arrive on this earth before they've had a chance to prove themselves here on this earth with their sign later on in the 3 degrees of glory, which, as we understand, have all kinds of divisions too. They just got that mixed up. See, they're judging man on his arrival on earth instead of allowing God to make this judgment after we leave this earth, after we've tried to prove ourselves in our second estate. So it's just mixed up. If we get that out of
the engine system, it's gonna be pretty hard. So we're gonna have trouble with those things, I think, just as we often have in converting people in the early days that wanted to maintain a Protestantism and keep it with love. Virginia? Oh, yes. Well, it's officially outlawed by the government now. But it's still there. It's still there. I've been there for a long time. Well, now, there is some communal living down in this part of India. Cooperative living. Sort of like this fellow Anderson has down in South America in. Was it Paradise Valley in Guatemala or something? Is that Guatemala? Yeah. There's something along that line going on down in southern India, and there's some church members involved. And I understand that a lot of the converts are coming from that area. There are no church buildings in India, and whether the government will permit that, I do not know. But of course, we rent many buildings in most parts of the world anyway. Well, let me say just a couple of other things. The gospel requires freedom. It's hard for the gospel to be where there is no freedom, because dictators, despots of every type, cut out the church, particularly if the church is successful and influential. The government will immediately start to attack it. As Mormonism grows and becomes more prevalent in the United States, government leaders will put more and more oppression on us. You see, we have rid ourselves of our hospitals because they're going to attack governmental units. They're going to tax our hospitals. It might come someday, the church being our own home. And there are hints of that taking place in the world. Well, getting back to freedom. Paul, of course, was the ambassador that started to take the gospel to other areas from the little area where he grew up, down in here. He could only do that because of the freedom allowed by the Roman government. Now, freedom is a very precious thing that we take too lightly. You have to go to other parts of the world and see the restrictions. The one thing the Romans allowed was freedom of travel. Anybody could go anywhere within the Roman Empire. Otherwise, the church would not have spread. Compare that to today's communist nations. You cannot even go to the next town in either Russia or China without a permit. You must carry a card with you at all times, stating many things concerning yourself. So if you, and police can and do constantly ask people arbitrarily, you know, like a roadblock, let's see your card. If your card says some other town, you're in trouble. So there's no freedom of travel in the communist world. So again, to be restrictions on travel in India. And you see, that could be a mighty bad thing for the church if you arrive at that kind of report. So if the church is to be established in India, maybe it's got to be done soon. Because in Bharata, in this parliamentary conference, is trying to do away with the two-party system in that country. She wants only a one-party system. And the other restrictions that she just keeps putting on are just a slow movement towards communism. In this big political affair that went on, and we got kicked out of the hotel, and let her, and it doesn't mention that, she could come in. Every day, front page headline of Indira's pronouncement in her speech of the day. Number one, Russia is our greatest friend. Russia's never been ready. And then this thing of going away with the old political system, every day there's something against the United States. Well, I think that I may not have given you too much along the line of lesson today. I've got a greatly increased perspective, as we usually do when we travel to other countries where other things are going on, and appreciation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. To put things in greater perspective for what I have studied about Paul's missionary journey and realizing that was only possible because I'm certain through the Lord that he allowed that freedom to exist, so this promise could be made
The same was true of the restoration of the gospel in this day and age. We have religious freedom in the United States of America. No other country on earth where the gospel could have been established would not be there. And if the Lord was, if the time is right for some of these other countries to have the gospel, secondly, you know, I'm sure our church is exploring that. There wouldn't be some growth and plenty of growth from that. There's going to have to be some maintenance of freedom of travel and some other freedoms and other things that the gospel. The gospel is the best thing most people can have. If they could only have the gospel, that country would change. I don't know that it will change ever, really, the kind of Western style countries that so much can grow. Unless it has been a blockading life in a communist style, or that's the freedom it's maintained. The Hindu religion has somehow got to be put out of existence. And I don't know a better way to do it than to get all the untouchables, the mighty numerous. But see, there's a better way in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And they were ones who were mainstream church by far. I don't even know if it's the same ground as the most numerous. Well, we'll perhaps talk about Paul's journeys and going to some of the future. I came home to a new appreciation for the gospel, and my testimony was certainly simple. I say the same thing to this question.
Thank you very much. That was really insightful. I forgot to ask the new people visitors and new people. So you want to introduce them? This is my next room.
Thanks a lot. I'm a friend. Oh, I'm standing.